Hey, it's Dolla White, and this is the Dolla White Podcast. Today's episode is all about whether or not highly recruited black athletes should consider playing at HBCUs. And my guest is the men's head basketball coach at Tennessee State University, Brian Penny Collins. Quick warning before we get started, if you've ever muttered the phrase, why isn't there a White History Month? This episode ain't for you. Actually, this entire podcast ain't for you, racist ass. Welcome to the Dolla White Podcast.
Live.
Yeah, what's up?
This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though.
Right here.
A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat-out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else.
Yeah.
It's the Dolla White Podcast.
Episode 14 out of the Dolla White Podcast. My guest today, the head basketball coach of Tennessee State University men's basketball, Brian Penny Collins. Thank you for being here, bro.
Man, thanks for having me, Dolla.
All right, so I wanted to have you on today to talk about highly recruited black student athletes attending HBCUs rather than PWIs, and this is why. I saw this story, I think, either last week or the week before about the University of Texas, and if you haven't heard this, I'm going to refresh everybody here. Last summer, black athletes across all sports at the University of Texas asked that the school spirit song, The Eyes of Texas, be replaced by a new song without racist undertones. Now, in response to that, some University of Texas donors wrote emails saying things like, quote, "It is sad. It is offending the blacks. As I said before, the blacks are free and it's time for them to move on to another state where everything is in their favor," unquote. Another donor wrote, "Less than 6% of our current student body is black. The tail cannot be allowed to wag the dog, and the dog must instead stand up for what is right. Nothing forces those students to attend UT Austin. Encourage them to select an alternate school now," unquote. Texas ultimately did not change the song. I remember back in 2016, Clemson head football coach Dabo Swinney said of athletes kneeling during the national anthem, quote, "Some of these people need to move to another country." Of course, I think it was last summer, Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State wore the OAN shirt. There's a ton of more examples about this where it feels like certain institutions don't really understand or even trying to understand racism at all. Is there a conversation to be had in this day and age that maybe some of these institutions don't care to garner an understanding of racism, and maybe an HBCU would be a better look?
So all those different stories that happen, it touches a chord in your heart, on your nerves, that we would be in this day and age and we're still dealing with stuff like that. But it's real. And right when you kind of think things are getting better, it's like somebody opens up the scab again, put the knife right back in your back, and it hurts. And over time, it just becomes one of those things that it's like, we feel like it's time for us to do and say something. And the nicest thing that you've seen us say is that, well, maybe we don't need to start going to these schools anymore.
You know, right?
Like, that's as nice as we can be as people to say, hey, we ain't going to beat you up or treat you like you treated us, or even get in a verbal altercation with y'all. We need to go other places. And so that's why you're starting to see more of these, you know, people protesting and articles coming out saying, you know, support HBCUs and things of that nature. But I just think it's just one of those things where it's such an old way of thinking. And the people that feel that way have been brought up and raised to believe that is the gospel and how you should feel. And we've always been treated as half, less than.
Right.
And so when people are making the comments of, you know, we're the tail on the dog, that's how they've been raised to think. And that's why, for me personally, the education that we can give our youth, it's not that HBCU is the only way to go, but the education of knowing where we came from, that a lot of these Power Five schools and PWI institutions, we weren't even allowed to go there.
Right.
In our parents' lifetime, we weren't even allowed to go there. And now we're going there, turn them into millions, in some cases, billion-dollar industries, and then we're being told to shut up and dribble or don't kneel. You know, Dolla, what would really kind of frustrate you is that even after you do things like that, you tell them it's not to disrespect the flag, it's not a disrespect to our university, it's not a disrespect to the state, we're not disrespecting the military, we love all of those things, we love them, our father's fault, our grandfather's fault, we love the flag, we're not disrespecting any of that, we just want to simply matter.
Yeah, we just
want to simply matter, we don't disrespect none of that. And then even when we say all that, you know what they say? You're lying. You lying. Yeah, you are. You're disrespecting the flag. You don't care. You need to get with the program or move.
I think the ultimate telltale to me is, I looked this up online. So TSU is 17% white. Florida A&M University, 7%. Xavier, 9% white. Winston-Salem University, 14.9%. On the flip side of that, here's some of the PWI's black populations. Duke University, 7%. University of Tennessee, 6%. University of Florida, 6%. Alabama, Michigan, Florida State, all over 10%. But the point that I'm making is that there are a lot of HBCUs where the percentage of white people is larger than the percentage of black people at some of these larger Power Five conferences. But I bet you if the power in athletics was changed to where all of the best athletes were going to HBCUs, and then you go out and you recruit a highly recruited white athlete, you're going to run into a lot. Not, I'm not saying all, but you're going to run into a lot of instances where their parents are not going to be comfortable sending their children to schools that are HBCUs. And I think that would be the ultimate telltale sign for me of really where we are, because what you ultimately want is you want somebody to send their children to a circumstance that you wouldn't send your children to.
That's interesting, because I lived it. You know, I attended Belmont University. I was the minority on campus, and I thought it was really cool for me to be able to take some of my teammates to their first ever black church. You know what I mean? Just seeing that experience, and then for them to repeat to me, well, you need to come to a white, you should come to, I have been, you know, been to a white everything. But a lot of my teammates hadn't been to a predominantly black barbecue or family reunion, you know, Christmas, or, you know, how we sing happy birthday. We say, how old are you? You know, they don't know nothing about none of that. I thought it was cool to just be able to do that for the first time for them, but it wasn't my first time doing right. something they like to do.
Right.
And, you know, you just said it, it's times 10 throughout the country. You look at a white community and a black family moving in, there's a lot of times when those kids are out there playing, our children will feel like a little apprehensive. A white group of kids would be a little more apprehensive of letting a young black child come play with them. When it's on the reverse side, is when we're black children and it's a white family that moves in, everybody, like, oh, come on over here, man. It's a little bubble, you know what I mean? Whatever. We are an accepting culture. At the end of the day, it just gets to a point where people just get tired, and that's when you see the side that gets publicized the most. But for the most part, I mean, I always feel like we're trying to do things peacefully in the right way.
I think that the selling points for these larger, more athletically established universities, especially if you're a black athlete coming from poverty, and I think there's a bad stigma that for whatever reason, all black athletes that go to college come from poverty, and that is not the truth at all, right? I say that to say, if you're trying to play professional basketball and you have Duke calling you, you can't get mad at that athlete for choosing Duke, because that may be the quickest way to success. But at the same time, if you really want to switch the narrative on these things, it's going to take a generation of players to say, no, we're not taking that call from Coach K. We're taking that call from Coach Penny, and we're going to go to TSU, right? You really have to have unity, which is hard when you know you go to Duke, you're going to get X, Y, and Z out of that, or increase your chances to move on to your next goal.
Recent history is that, you know, this is the easiest way to go. If you want to go to the NBA, you better go to Kentucky. Right. You better go to Duke. You know, that's the way to go. But the history of basketball will say otherwise. There was a time when, like I said, we weren't even allowed to go to the schools in the South, go to Kentucky, go to Vanderbilt, go to Ole Miss. And HBCUs were producing all the pros. I always keep the stat in my phone, the numbers that would surprise people about how many pros that, you know, people like Tennessee State has had. You know, we've had number one draft picks in football. We had Super Bowl winners. We've had guys that went on to the NBA and been multi all-stars. We've had double digit guys play in the NBA. We've had over 20 plus guys drafted in the NBA. We have the most guys ever drafted in the NFL. And when you want to talk about track and field, it ain't even close. We have the most Olympic gold medals. That's more than some of the Power Five schools that are out there. But the kids don't know that. So if I ask you right now, if I said school X, which is a Power Five school that plays on ESPN all the time, and they're in that big SEC or ACC conference, do you have a better chance of going pro from there or Tennessee State or Grambling State or Jackson State? A lot of kids will say, well, I probably have a better chance of going to the SEC, ACC school.
Right.
Well, there's several ACC schools that have produced less pro players than Jackson State, Grambling State, and Tennessee State, but they don't know that. And it's not like we can wear a shirt on our chest that says we got more NBA players than they do. But let me tell you this though, Dola White, do you know in 1958, 59, 1960, Tennessee State won 3 straight national championships? That was the first time in college basketball history that was done. It wasn't written about until UCLA did it with Lou Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and John Wooden. It wasn't publicized, but Tennessee State was the first, and they just got inducted into the National Hall of Fame.
Wow.
Now, I'm going to take it a step further. In 1960, 1961, 1962, 1963, 1965, 1967, 1968, every year in a row, we had guys drafted in the NBA. Think about that. That sounds like Kentucky to me.
Yeah.
I'm talking about 9 out of 12 years in a row, Tennessee State has somebody drafted in the NBA. Well, what if I told you that 2021, 2022, 2023, 2024, 2027, we had guys drafted in the NBA. There ain't no difference from the 1950s to the 2000s other than we had to go to HBCUs.
Right.
That's where all the talent was going. Well, I look like a whole lot better coach if I'm coaching Zion Williamson. I love my kids that I have now. I love them to death. I'll go to war behind them. But at the end of the day, a guy that can jump up and touch the top of the square, of course, you can do a whole lot of good. And Zion would have been an NBA player coming from Tennessee State or Duke. It didn't matter where the boy went. He was destined for greatness.
Right.
And I think that's the biggest thing. That it's not that all black athletes have to go to HBCUs. It's all athletes need to understand the history and tradition from these HBCUs instead of looking like, look at them, they trash. Look at them, I don't want to go there. Like, they don't have no stuff. We stopped getting stuff because you stopped coming here. We stopped getting TV coverage because you stopped coming here. We stopped getting all the NBA prospects because you're the prospect, not the school. The same school that didn't want you, didn't want your daddy, didn't want your granddaddy. And now you're making a millionaires. But we were the hot topic. We were the school that was producing Ed Too Tall Jones, going to the Super Bowl, Jefferson Street Joe, Joe Gilliam winning the Super Bowl as a quarterback with the Steelers, Dick Skull Barnett going to the Knicks and taking them to the NBA championship and averaging 27 points a game in the NBA. We were the school that had Ted Howe McClain drafted in the first round, go to the ABA, win 2 ABA championships. That was Tennessee State, you know? And not too long after that, we're the school that produced the number one woman in the country, Oprah Winfrey. Like, we're the school that did all of that. To me, Dola, that's the education. Like, we want y'all to be proud of our HBCUs. Stop looking like we're playing basketball in flip-flops and we don't have nothing. The tradition and everything that's special that African-Americans have done have come from HBCUs. We all started right here. And like I said, man, I'm not against it. I got my degree from PWI. I've coached other places. I have mentors at other places. I just want the kids to be educated on who we are and where they come from and to look at us with the same esteem and respect that they look at the Dukes and the Kentuckys and the UCLAs of the world.
I think for whatever reason, I mean this in college sports and in pro sports too, I don't know that players understand the power that they have because they are the product. Mm-hmm. Players are the product, period. There is no NBA without the players. There is no college basketball without the players. So if whatever HBCU lands a couple of these 5-star guys and they start coming to those schools, not only are you shining a light on those schools, but you're also making money for those schools off things like jerseys, off of paraphernalia, off of all of those things. I think that would be huge, man. I think that would be huge to put HBCUs on a whole other level.
You know, trends come and go. We started the trends at HBCUs, and we were the culture. We were the culture so much they made TV shows about us, the different worlds. They made movies like School Days, and that's what we grew up watching. The culture is coming up now. They don't have nothing on TV and nothing to aspire to say, ooh, I would like to experience that one day, other than actually going to the games. To me, what it's going to take is the guys that could go to Kentucky and Duke, the guys that are potential one-and-done guys. It's going to take a group of guys to say, you know what? That trend right there is worn out. Those are baggy jeans. Those are VHS tapes right there. How can we figure out a way to make our own history? I know we can be remembered by doing this. We could be the recruiting classes that do this. You weren't the 100th player to come from Kentucky. You weren't the 50th national championship from this institution or the 50th Final Four team. You were on the first team ever to take a school to the Final Four. If you were that good, won't you strive for that history? Strive to bring something back. And you be the person that blazed a new track.
I saw the documentary, the 30 for 30, about the Fab Five and how they all just kind of were like, we're going to do this. And if that moment were to happen for an HBCU, I feel like it's over at that point. Like, it takes one team, 5 guys like that to say, this is what we're going to do and this is where we're going to do it. And then I think at that point, that just turns the table on the entire NCAA. If you had a Fab Five at TSU, that's it. I think at that point, HBCUs are going to be the new wave.
Honestly, that's the kind of the inspiration behind what I want to do at Tennessee State. You know, I'm speaking on behalf of all HBCUs, but I would love for a recruiting class to say, you know what, let's do this together here. But I would be just as excited if they did it at FAMU or Howard or anywhere else. I would be cheering from the background on somebody to do it. But that is the inspiration. What the Fab Five did, that to me, that was a moment in history. They didn't win the national championship, though. Mm-mm. But they made a decision to go somewhere, and the swagger and the black Nike socks and the baggy shorts and everybody started wearing a Michigan starter jackets. And stuff. You know, it was a real moment. That moment can happen again. Who's going to be their young man to decide, you know what, let's go do that. It can happen.
I don't have his name on the top of my head, but I know somebody committed to Howard last year.
Maker.
Yeah. And I think it's going to start trickling down over the next couple of years. I think it'll take a couple of years, but I do think eventually some kind of moment like that is going to happen. And if America loves one thing, no matter what the race is, when it comes to sports, if America loves one thing, it's like an underdog story, right? And if you start seeing, you know, TSU or FAMU or Xavier or somebody like that start making a run in the tournament, and they're going to gain a lot of fans before a lot of those fans even know anything about that university. They're going to be like, who are these guys? Because we all love an underdog story, right? Like, we all want to watch those historic moments while they're happening.
Absolutely, man. And I think the one thing about that group, they decide to do that, they'll be legends before they even step on the court.
Yeah.
They'll be, the press will be here before they even play a game. And I think that's the funnest part. You know, I think about the Maker situation, the unfair pressure. Let's just say, for instance, Maker doesn't go pro next year. He has to go back to Howard. It's not a failure.
No.
People saying, oh, if he don't go pro, if he don't kill, if he don't average 30, then ain't no more top athletes going to go to HBCUs. That's not true. It's a lot of top athletes to go to big schools and they don't do well right away. Or they have to go back to school. Or they actually went to too big of a school. But I don't see a bunch of people saying, don't go to that school no more.
Right.
So why don't one time a kid makes a decision to go, or two, three kids decide to go and it doesn't work out right away, it doesn't mean we'll never try it again. I don't like that. And that's another thing that we got to stop doing. We all got to come together to make sure this thing happens.
Yeah. And then this thing here, it would take commitment from the athletes. Honestly, if you took the top 15 ball players in the country and they all decided to go to different HBCUs, that's 15 people that could change the world. If you go down to one team, that's literally five people could flip the entire script on college athletics. Just thinking about how much power that is, the power is absolutely with the players, right? The fact that five high school kids could just change the outlook of college athletics shows you how powerful the athlete actually is in this.
It is, man. It's no better example than that. But the only way it will work is it would take a community of people to all be around those young men and say, listen, don't listen to the gnats. Don't listen to the bugs. Let's focus on the prize, because you the line. And if the group around them is telling them, let's focus on this, and that's fine. But when you got so many people pulling on these kids and telling them, this is the only way to go, and this is the only option. And like you said, financial reasons are important too. You know, some schools can be allowed to give a little bit more federal Pell Grant money in your pocket than other schools can. But at the end of the day, you don't want to go to a school because of a little bit of steak here and shrimp there, when you know you're going to eat at the end of the day. You know what I mean? You don't want to choose a school for the buildings. It's about the people in the buildings.
Let me ask you this, and I don't know everything about this, but I know it's looking like players in the NCAA can or will start being able to make some kind of money off of their likeness. Is that going to help schools like TSU size and HBCUs?
Depends on where you can market them. I know at Tennessee State, we have a great plan in place for young men and women or young student athletes that have opportunity to come to TSU. We have a new athletic director, Dr. Mickey Allen, who's an innovative thinker and real creative on how he wants to be able to do that. But at the end of the day, if you have some guys, a guy like Zion, you look up, he's going to be on Prince Chicken Box. he'll be on a Slim and Huskies poster board, billboard in the middle of North Nashville. I mean, what you could do is endless. A Mercedes-Benz have a commercial, and you know Zion's driving the commercial with a TSU jersey on. Those are opportunities. It really kind of equals out the playing field a little bit if you have creative thinkers around the program that are able to put those young student athletes in position to be able to get paid off their likeness. You know, autograph sessions, opportunities like that. You know, there's so many things that you can do. And us being in Nashville is the key. That's the golden goose. We're in one of the most productive cities in the country. Mm. Now, you know, probably a little bit better city than Mississippi Valley State is in, or Alcorn State. Being in Nashville is a great place to be for you to really be really progressive with the business around. We have Amazon coming in town. We have so many things here. So it'll be an opportunity for a young student athlete to really benefit off their likeness.
If you're a Zion, you choose TSU or Xavier or one of these other HBCUs, I mean, you got to think like, yeah, you went to Duke and you're on the same Mount Rushmore as Christian Laettner and all the other great Duke players. You go to a TSU or another HBCU, they're going to build a statue for you. You know what I mean? Like when you leave that campus, like there's going to be a big statue of you outside of the Gentry Center if you choose that school and you go there and you bring them, you know, to the Final Four. I mean, the thought of that is crazy.
The best way I can explain it is when you are, I'll just use my own self for example. I played at Belmont. I loved my time there. I was on the team that took the first team to the NCAA tournament. You know, I go back on Belmont's campus, the people that are still there, that, you know, they, oh, it's a penny, you know, whatever, whatever. But when I go to Kroger's in Bordeaux, nobody brings it up.
Yeah.
Nobody's talking about what happened at Belmont, you know what I mean? But if Zion or somebody like that was to come to TSU and do that, they would be able to go to Rivergate Mall and they couldn't even go to Foot Locker without somebody saying, you know.
They'd be a god. They would be a god. There'd be a mural on Jefferson Street before the first game. You know what I mean? Like, they'd be a god.
It's our culture, man. It's, you feel the jazz and the spirit of all the rhythm and blues on Jefferson Street. You just feel it. You know what I'm saying? You come to a game. Last year we had 8,000 at a game. That 8,000 feels like 30,000. Mm-hmm. And Aristocrat of Bands is in there. And it's just a different feel. It's almost like a small version of the Madison Square Garden when you got people like Dola White sitting courtside and Mitchell Walker sitting courtside. You know, it just feels different. I agree, man. This is one of those things that you come in here, you could be the all-time great at Duke, but being it, doing it here in your culture. And here's the other thing we haven't talked about. When we win and do things like that, the community thrives because of that. The businesses around the university grow. The university grows. And now you've essentially put the dollar back into the historically Black university.
Yeah, and I think that's true for probably most HBCUs. They are most of the time located in a more African-American-centric area where the people in the neighborhoods and the people that own businesses are all part of it, man. And cool thing about Nashville, and I don't know that this is true for any other HBCU, but I said this a couple weeks ago when I had Keisha Knight Pulliam and Lance Groves on, and we were talking about HBCUs. But the cool thing about Nashville is TSU homecoming is not TSU homecoming. It is Nashville homecoming, right? Like, I know people that have not lived in this city for 10 years and never took a class at TSU, but they're from Nashville and they come back every year for homecoming because it's just Nashville homecoming, bro. Like, it's called TSU homecoming, but this shit is Nashville homecoming, man. Like, it really is.
Dola White, Nashville is not the only city that thrives on homecoming. When people come in town, they stay in hotels in Mount Juliet. They're eating dinner in Brentwood. They're in Lebanon at the outlet malls. I mean, it's everybody in this 40-mile vicinity.
Yeah.
To homecoming.
I agree. Anything we missed out on? Because you've about recruited me. I'm about ready to come suit up for you. I'm not going to help you out much, but
I do want to say this one thing. It's a stat that I wrote in my notes one time. I did a perception versus reality stat check because kids always say, I can't go pro from Tennessee State. You know, I don't, you know, whatever. Let's just talk about the schools in the state of Tennessee. Belmont's had two pros. MTSU has two in the history of their program. Two from MTSU, one from East Tennessee State, four from Chattanooga, and one from Lipscomb. Okay?
Okay.
You added all those schools together, it wouldn't be more pros than TSU's had.
Wow.
Even if you live in Nashville and you're coming up through this ranking of high school basketball, you say to yourself, oh, TSU, you know, whatever. But the reality is we've produced more than all those other mid-major schools combined. And kids just don't know that. It's not like going pro is the only thing great. If you don't go pro, it don't matter. But that's what kids want to know. And these are stats that people do not know. I'm going to give you another stat. Tennessee State, we've had 15-plus play in the NBA. Over 23 drafted. Jackson State has had 14. Grambling State has had 10. I'm going to give you a bunch of schools who have million-dollar surplus budgets. TCU, 8. West Virginia, 15. East Carolina, 3. South Florida, 6. Tulane, 14. UCF, 7. UMass, 8. VCU, 11. Miami, 15. Virginia Tech, 15. Butler, 5. Nevada, 12. San Diego State, 12. Ole Miss, 9. And I could go on and on. But my point is that I just named all those schools, and none of them have more than Tennessee State. And Jackson State and Grambling had more than some of those as well. But kids don't know that. Kids do not know the HBCUs that we kind of frown upon and kind of don't help and don't donate, give back to. We watching them crumble. We wonder why. because we have to continue to support them. And our kids need to go to these schools and continue to learn about where you come from, because some of the same schools that we think that are better than, that we're giving to, still have not caught us.
When I asked you to do this, I was thinking of Texas and all that, but you've killed this, bro. You've crushed this. Like I told you, I'm about ready to suit up for TSU if I could make it, if I could make it more than one trip down the floor without passing out, you know? Brian Finney Collins, man, thank you so much. Good luck next season. We'll have to do this again sometime for sure.
Man, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Real talk.
Quick bit of trivia before we get out of here. Coach Collins mentioned that he played college ball at Belmont University. Do you know who else played college ball at Belmont University? That's right. The sponsor of this podcast, William Wilson of the Hammonds Group, and Will probably would have went pro too, but he was so focused on real estate, even back then, he couldn't focus on ball. His coach would constantly tell him, William, you got to keep your mind in the game. But all Will wanted to do was not guard the other players. He wanted to sell them a house, and he wants to do the same thing for you. Ask yourself this question. Do you want a realtor who gave up the fame and fortune of playing in the National Basketball Association to sell houses? He loved selling houses that much that he could have made it to the NBA and decided not to because he wants to sell you a house. That's how much he loves his job. Don't you want a realtor like that? The answer is hell yes, you do. So call my guy, William Wilson of the Hammonds Group, 615-216-4809. If you're looking to buy or sell in the state of Tennessee, call my guy, William Wilson, 615-216-4809. I want to say thank you once again to my guest, Brian Finney Collins, the head basketball coach at Tennessee State University. Brand new episode next week. My guest is Bola Sekumbi, the founder and CEO of Clever Girl Finance, and we're going to talk all about that money. Make sure you tap in with me. Thank you for subscribing to this podcast. Tell your friends about it. As my wife says, sharing is caring. And follow me Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Clubhouse, all of them. At DoleWite101, DoleWite101. That's my time. Back next week. I'm out.